Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike Florio can be found on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He is Pro Football Talk and also works for NBC Sports, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight show now. Hello again, Mike. How are you?
Hey, doing great. How are you guys today?
We're good. Do we know the substance for which Julian Edelman tested positive yet?
We don't. And I think that somebody unleashed what is a brilliant PR strategy by putting that out there, that he tested positive for an unrecognized substance, because it created the impression that maybe there's no PED at all. But I studied the PED policy, and let me just give you the shortest possible thumbnail version. Even if it's not a recognized substance, the positive test doesn't get finalized unless they believe that the unrecognized substance nevertheless has the same chemical structure and produces the same effects as one of the 71 specifically listed anabolic agents in the PED policy. So even though they didn't recognize it, they recognized enough to conclude that this thing acts the same way an anabolic agent does, and therefore it's a positive result. So it was great because it worked on me. I'm thinking, well, okay, maybe this guy has something, and maybe he can beat this on appeal. I don't think that's going to be the case. They just haven't pigeonholed it in one of the 71 specific categories. It still has something about it that makes it close enough to an anabolic agent to result in the four-game suspension.
If this thing is an outlier as far as the testing policy is concerned, or the testing, the net is concerned, is there a possibility that there are other, you know, cocktails of drugs that guys are getting into? Are we? Is it possible that we're on the edge of some new finding and in a test, well, new stuff the players are using?
They always try to stay ahead, the guys who are inclined to cheat. Now, I don't know that any guys are inclined to cheat, because everybody who gets caught, right? Well, I got a supplement and there was something in it that I didn't know about. Nope, they've never caught a cheater. They only catch the guys who accidentally ingest something they shouldn't. But I think that this is just an example of the reality that there may be other substances that aren't named in the policy, but they can tell. And I don't know, I have no idea how they even begin to determine the similarities of the chemical structure. This is probably high-level scientific analysis, breaking it down to the molecular level, but they can spot in that substance enough to know that it is something that operates the same way that one of the 71 listed substances operates. But I'm sure guys are always looking, and chemistry is always working toward finding something that can't be detected, and the NFL's testing procedure sensitive enough to at least flag a substance. Even if they can't name it, they know that it's close enough to one of the banned substances that it triggers the four-game suspension.
It's about context here too, though, right? Because of the presence of Alex Guerrero, because of the conflict that's been going on at the practice facility in Foxborough and down the road at Guerrero's clinic, with some of the weirdness of the TB12 stuff and the pliability quackery, you just start to wonder, because there's other layers here of where the team didn't even really know, and most teams really don't know, where guys are getting various things they ingest.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I don't know. Maybe this is something Edelman has been using for years, and the science on the back end has finally caught up to it, where they're at least able to tell that there's something in there that isn't one of the things they specifically test for, but they were able to crack the code. So it's a game of cat and mouse, and it's never ending because the stakes are too high. Once you get to a point where you're making significant NFL money, you're getting older, younger and cheaper guys are in a position to take your job, and you've got Bill Belichick, who makes that dispassionate, detached assessment about every player every year. Is this guy worth it? Coming off of a torn ACL, what's Julian Edelman going to do? Who's going to pay him anything close to what the Patriots pay him to play football? It's very easy to justify doing whatever you have to do to get yourself in a position, not where you can just play, but you play at a high level.
Speaking of the detached Bill Belichick, you got a piece on Pro Football Talk Now, Mike, that details a couple of things about Rob Gronkowski. What do we know? What don't we know? What was noise and what might be tangible going forward?
Well, we got to spin it back to the immediate aftermath of Super Bowl 52 when he was asked about rumors that he may retire. And he said, I don't know how you heard about that, which confirmed that it was something he was thinking about. And I believe if they'd have won that game, he would have walked away. But he spent 2 or 3 months thinking about what he was going to do. 2 days before the draft, he announced that he would be returning for 2018, and he let his head coach, Bill Belichick, know about it. I'm told that as recently as 3 days before the draft, the Patriots were calling other teams about a potential Rob Gronkowski trade. Now, I do not believe it got to the point where there was a trade on the table that Belichick wanted to accept and that Tom Brady came in and made a power play saying, I'm going to retire if you trade Gronkowski, prompting the owner, Robert Kraft, to put the kibosh on the whole thing. I don't believe that, and I've tracked that down from several different angles. But I do believe that the Patriots were exploring their options because they didn't have a commitment from Gronkowski that he was going to return. So, like every team does with some, many, maybe all of its assets. You know, there are some teams out there that I think everybody on the roster is available in trade. We've gone through periods with the Raiders back before they kind of found their way with Derek Carr and Khalil Mack, where every year at the trade deadline, they were calling teams basically saying, hey, is there anyone on the roster that you want? So it's one thing to make phone calls and inquire. It's another thing to actually get the trade into a position where it could happen, and I don't think it ever got close because I don't think there was ever a conversation with Gronkowski about what he would want financially from a new team, whether he'd show up. Because remember, February, March, April, we didn't know if he was going to show up. We didn't know if he was going to play. I don't think it ever got close enough that there were conversations like that.
I understand completely if the answer to this question is Terrell Owens is weird. But why is Terrell Owens being weird about his Hall of Fame induction ceremony?
Well, look, I think that there are a couple of potential explanations. One thing I heard in the immediate aftermath of his decision not to show up was that there's a very good chance that none of the teams he played for is willing to underwrite the cost of his Hall of Fame party. So he's kind of on his own, and you're talking about an expensive proposition. Last year, Jerry Jones had a very lavish affair with Justin Timberlake performing. And if no team is going to pay for it because he basically disintegrated every bridge back to every team he played for, then I would understand why they wouldn't want to do that. But I think at a deeper level, and this has been there because he didn't show up for the things that we see happen right after he got in. He didn't show up for the NFL honors ceremony that night. He didn't show up at the Super Bowl the next day with all the other new inductees. I think that he is miffed, not because he had to wait 2 tries to get in and got in on try number 3. I think it's the length to which some of the voters went to justify not putting him in. I mean, it would have been easy to say, look, there's a waiting line. There's a pecking order. Marvin Harrison got in before Terrell Owens, not because Marvin Harrison is quote-unquote better than T.O., but because he was waiting longer. And Terrell Owens waits, and he eventually gets in. But so many of the voters were just over the top ripping this guy. It just, I remember coming to the conclusion, why are they even considering him?
Like, see, that's the thing. I would ask, then why not just decline the honor? It's one thing to say, I'm not going to go to the induction. If you really want to be a badass about it, you say, I don't need your damn Hall of Fame at this point.
Well, you know, that's not a bad point, but I think that he understands, even T.O. understands, there is value to having a bronze likeness of yourself that is put in this giant room that is going to continue to expand and expand and expand. And, you know, I mean, it won't be our problem, but, I mean, this thing eventually is going to have, what, 10,000 busts in it. But, you know, at least for now, it's a fairly small group, and T.O. isn't going to turn down the chance to have his bust in there. But I think that at a certain level, it's kind of like, hey, if you don't want me, I don't want you. And I don't want to come and act like everything's fine when I know that there are Hall of Famers who were campaigning to keep me out and voters who didn't want me in. I'm not going to act like everything's okay. And I like the fact that T.O. is being true to himself.
Mike, we had a holdout in Atlanta with one of the best players in the NFL. And I wonder, you know, because of where he is in his contract status and because of where the next CBA kind of comes around, I wonder if you think that we may see over the next couple of OTAs, a couple of training camps, this one and the next perhaps, more players doing this to get immediate money, worried about potentially the long-term future of their status, of the communication between the union and the league.
I think it's more about just striking while the iron's hot. And when you look at the uptick that we've seen in recent months, especially at the quarterback position, and I think the trigger for Julio Jones wasn't that he's number eight among all receivers. I think it's that he's at $14.25 million and Matt Ryan's at $30 million. And Julio Jones looks at that and says, wait a minute. Something's wrong with this picture here. And he's sending a message. He's taking a stand. It's relatively inexpensive, although $84,435 is nothing to sneeze at. That's what he and anyone else who skips the three-day mandatory minicamp will lose if they enforce the fines. Now, if guys are going to give up $40,000 a day to miss training camp, that takes it to another level. But you've got guys throughout the league who are choosing to take this stand, and I think it's just an acknowledgement, maybe more of what they now know about health and safety. There's only so many years you can do this. There's only so many chances you have to get paid. And I think agents need to avoid these ultra-long-term deals. They're talking about a six-year extension for Zach Martin, the Cowboys guard. He's got 1 year left on his current deal. You really want to commit for 7 years? Aaron Rodgers committed for 7 years back in 2013. I think one of the reasons he doesn't complain about his contract more than he does, and he doesn't complain much, he's a big boy. He's a smart guy. He went to Cal. He signed his name on the dotted line in 2013 of a deal that commits him through 2019. Why are guys doing that? And now that we see Kirk Cousins with only a three-year deal in Minnesota, I think some of the great players out there are realizing, you know what, it's better to do short-term deals. It's better to keep going back to the trough and get another deal. And I think that's the impetus for a lot of this. Guys taking a stand because they know they got one, maybe two opportunities in their careers to really get paid.
Andrew Luck reportedly threw a football. And then I look at the details of the story and the information that's coming out. It's not all good, and it got a little strange because it's not just him throwing an NFL football, is it?
No, and it's Andrew Luck at minicamp practice yesterday throwing a high school ball with the white stripes on it and a small, not a college ball, but a high school sized ball. And he said he had a bit of a mental block when it came to throwing the regulation football. Look, if you're a golfer and you have a mental block with your six iron, you use the seven or the five, right? If you have a mental block with the NFL regulation football and you're an NFL quarterback, that's a problem. And it's amazing to me the lengths to which the organization has gone over the last year and a half to prop this up and be optimistic and downplay any issues, and now Luck's in on it too. And I'm not going to believe anything anyone says until we see the guy back based upon what happened last year. And I think that there's good reason to look at every development and find that. And I hate to say, oh, you're so negative, but my God, they whether they did it deliberately or not, they lied to us for an entire year about this guy's status. And now he's talking about having a mental block when it comes to throwing a football, and he's still not at practice throwing a regulation football, and they act like everything's going to be fine magically at some point in the next 6 weeks. I'll believe it when I see it, and until then, I'm not going to put any stock in anything Luck, Frank Reich, Chris Ballard, Jim Irsay says about the situation.
You mentioned long-term deals and what they do to teams. I know Luck's not, I think it's $23 million a season for Luck, and that's not exactly Matt Ryan money or anything, but I that's got to play into, if it's delusion, some of the delusion that the Colts are operating with.
Well, because there's nothing they can really do because of the injury guarantees until after this year. I'm going to pull up the contract right now. The out would be after this year, and he would have made $75 million over 3 years, but they would avoid next year, looks like about $21 million. They got to make a decision, I assume, early 2019, March 2019. So if he doesn't play this year, if he's not the guy that he once was, I think the Colts have a very, very tough decision to make. But financially for this year, it's a no-brainer. They're paying him one way or the other, so you keep him around and you see what he can do.
Mike, thank you. We'll talk next week.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.